This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Your host, Felice Gerwitz, is an author, a publisher, and your radio show host. She will encourage, educate, and inspire you with answers to your most pressing questions, from homeschool, marriage, parenting, and much more. Felice loves to equip moms to live a Christian life because every moment counts. Be sure to visit her website at mediaangels.com. And here's your host, Felice Gerwitz.
Welcome to all of you who are listening to us today. And today I have a very special guest on that I have actually met in real life and sat at her conferences many times listening to her as a homeschool mom. And today I want to welcome Kathy Duffy. Welcome, Kathy.
I'm glad to be with you today.
Yeah, just a wealth of information. You have been for many years, Kathy, and I love how your books have taken a turn and changed through the years, because when we started out, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, there really wasn't a lot of curriculum out there. But before we do get started with that, Kathy, why don't you give us your website?
Okay, Kathy Duffy Reviews, yes, with a C, and Reviews, R-E-V-I-E-W-S.
Okay.
Good enough.
Yeah. And so, Kathy, you started, through the years putting together these reviews, but you were, just like the rest of us, you started with the idea of homeschooling your boys, and I know you have three of them. So tell us a little bit about that journey and, what made you decide to start homeschooling?
Oh, wow. I haven't been asked that question in a long time. We started back in 1982. It was the dark ages of homeschooling, and there were a handful of people in our county who started homeschooling the same year, just kind of out of the blue. And we found each other, amazingly. We found each other,
wow.
And it was very much a God thing that there was some spiritual direction, something underlying it. It wasn't about, for some people it was a little bit about the academic issues, but mostly there was something else going on, and we all weren't really sure what this was all about. We were just sticking our toes in and helping each other out. Let's figure it out. So it was an adventure that, a number of us just went through together and just helped each other, and that's how my books came about. I started reviewing curriculum. That was something I loved and already had an interest in, and so I just started finding things, and we had little fledgling newsletters that we were typing up and mailing
right.
to each other.
We're dating ourselves.
It's vintage, right? I know. People wouldn't even know. But it just grew from there because, you start accumulating the information, and, along comes, the internet, and certainly things change dramatically. But, just providing information and help for each other is where so many people got started.
Right. I think that's amazing. And it really was, the power of the Holy Spirit, because this new generation of homeschoolers has really been amazing. And, we'll make an impact on future generations as well, because we have our first crop of homeschooled kids who are now homeschooling kids of their own, and how exciting
yes.
is that? So
it is. It is exciting.
Yeah. Well, I started homeschooling a few years after you. I began in '86, very reluctantly, and coming from an education background and wanting to change the world within the educational system, I found that I was hitting my head against the wall. And when my own son was diagnosed with some learning issues, and that happened to be what my major was, so the Lord had prepared me in that regard. So I was really equipped to homeschool, but really reluctant. And so people like yourself were ones that I really looked at and said, okay, they seem to have it together, and, they have some really good advice for us. So, Kathy, you started putting together curriculum, and you had some different books that came along, and currently you have a book that we're going to discuss today, because there's a lot of help there for homeschool moms who are interested in getting you know, it's not every single curriculum that's out there, so let's start with that. But it is 101 that you consider top pick in the selection of homeschool curriculum. So let's discuss that book.
Well, the book that really grew out of the original newsletters, but you know, many we're about 20 editions down the road from the newsletters.
Right.
Yeah, it just started accumulating reviews. But I began to see, I reached a point where I had so many reviews. I had two separate books, each about almost 500 pages. And I realized that people were picking them up and they were just overwhelmed because it was starting to get to the other extreme with too much information, where we had hardly anything available to us. The number of resources in the homeschool world has just exploded. And it had already at that point, and so that's when I went to the top picks idea. And I tried, instead of giving you everything in the world, to just walk you through the curriculum selection process. So in the beginning of the book, I talk about how to choose curriculum, and I have questionnaires and things to work through, goal setting and your preferences as to the approach to education. You might use, Charlotte Mason or classical. And then I get into learning styles, so you can put all of that together in the context of what's likely to work best for your children and for the parent's teaching style, because that's
right.
Important. And then narrow down to, here are the best products on the market. Here's how they reflect these different things you've discovered as you've thought about how to put together your curriculum, so that people have a more reasonable world of things to consider as they're just starting out, instead of the whole universe of homeschool products.
Right. And, your website is very well laid out, and it gives,
that's where you'll find the thousands of reviews.
Right.
Once you've gotten into the book, then you can go look at the website and get overwhelmed.
Right. It really is, it's not just a 101 of top picks. It really is, it reminds me of, like the college 101 class. I don't know if you did that, purposely,
yeah.
But it really is a 101 of, formation and getting your thoughts clarified, just like Kathy briefly shared just now, with your goals for homeschooling. And that's really important, because I find that, people that flounder with their home education are ones who really haven't spent some time to think about, what their goals are for their children. And let's face it, you mentioned a little bit about you starting out, and that's why I wanted to bring up that question, because many of us began homeschooling without a real strong thought for academics, which did come. But it wasn't our main goal for many of us at the time. I think it was more of a spiritual revival. And, as I progressed on in my homeschool journey, because I'm still homeschooling, where you've graduated your boys. And
I've graduated them, and now I'm working with my grandchildren, the
yay.
Older kids. So we're just really getting into it now.
Yeah, that is so cool. As we progressed on, I noticed that homeschoolers were coming from a lot of different areas. Those who really were interested in academics. I remember somebody coming up to me and asking me, if my goals were Harvard or Yale for my children. And I'm sorry to say I laughed too, because it never. That didn't cross my mind, and that was why this one dear young homeschool mom was homeschooling her little ones, and she was really interested in what kindergarten curriculum I was using, and so I wasn't, and so never did, and I chalked that up to a very strong Montessori and preschool certification that I added to my education degree. So we did a lot of hands-on. And I noticed that there's a lot of different reasons that people homeschool. So it's really good to clarify. And Kathy, your book is one I highly recommend. A little disclaimer, my books, the Creation Study Guides, are there, and they're unit studies, which, Kathy, when we began, unit studies were really the flavor of the month. And now probably demographically, they're down at the smallest end. Why do you think that is?
That's an interesting question because I still love unit studies, but they take more work. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the shifts I've seen in the homeschooling world is that people are looking for more instant, here we go, you know, just open the box, put everything out, or, you know, turn on your computer, you know, plop your child down, and there, you know, you're all set. And unit studies are, you know, gather your materials, you know, find some real books, you know, and a little bit more challenging to do. But I still love unit studies. So
right. Well, I
probably always
too.
Be a fan because they were such an important part of our homeschooling. You know, it was funny because when we started homeschooling, I had an image in my mind that we would, you know, do school at home. I didn't know better. And I had gone out, really worked hard to get curriculum because it was hard to get curriculum back then. And the curriculum didn't turn out to be a really good solution. I ended up jumping off and doing other things. But we went to the beach in September when we first started homeschooling because my children were so worried, my eldest son particularly, about what's going to happen to us, you know, if we're not in school. You know, he was terribly worried. And his friend down the street wasn't helping matters. You know, he's saying, you know, you're going to go to jail and things like that. Oh, really? And so I said, well, we get to do things other kids don't. So we're going to the beach in September while everyone else is in school. And, you know, on that day, you know, we've been to the beach frequently, but on that day, a school of dolphins swam by right off the beach. And I had never seen them in that close. I was like, what is this? You know, what's going on? And then we were talking about the difference between dolphins and porpoise. And we, you know, just got into that. And then there were shells washed up on the beach, whole shells, not just the ground up crumbles you usually get. And so we were putting together a shell collection. So we end up with this kind of built-in unit study just dropped on us.
Right.
And it came out of that, yeah, we're going to hit the beach in September, so you're not so worried, you know. But it was kind of the start of unit studies for us from that point.
Right.
So, I have this particular love of unit studies because of that.
Right. And, you know, with my son, being in that special needs category, that was a way that opened the world for him. And it was funny, I had one that was into the stars and one that was into the ocean. So, you know, I felt like, you know, you couldn't be as different ends of the world as those two.
Yeah.
But
I'm just realizing we're here talking about unit studies, and I imagine some of the people in our audience don't even have a clue what we're talking about. We should probably take a moment to explain what a unit study is.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Sorry, apologize to all those listening
no
who are just wondering what on earth. But unit studies is the idea you have a theme, and you take that theme, whatever it is, and then you explore different topics. And you can go as broad as you want to, but you might do some, you know, reading some real books about whatever the topic is, and then you might read historical books relating to the topic or science books relating to the topic. You might have your child doing language arts activities in relation to the topic. But the idea is that it's all tied to the theme, so the learning is integrated, so that they're starting to make connections between the subjects instead of keeping each subject in its own isolated area. And I have to say, learning is far more interesting when you do that. Okay, so I'm sorry, I interrupted your experience.
No,
there.
just with, you know, having two different, you know, interests in my children. At the time, I had the two children. And I found now that the younger three really are not, they don't like the unit studies as much because they're really interested in history. So for them, I think science gives itself more over to experiential learning more so than history, you know, other than, you know, doing some things like a diorama or, you know, that type of thing for younger children. Or reenactments. Right. Yeah. The little ones do like that. So, but yeah, you know, we and that's get Kathy's books. I'm sure she's got everything through. You know, some people may not even have delved into, you know, what is Charlotte Mason, what is classical, what is, you know, just eclectic, which I feel like I fall more into. And here's a really interesting comment from the chat room. She, Judy says, I happen to think that moms who live in states like I do, Pennsylvania, that has a very stringent rule about what is to be shown in their portfolio for review, shy away from unit studies because it makes it tricky to show written examples of progression of learning.
It's so unfortunately true. The more you have to report to somebody else and make it look like something they will understand, the more you shy away from the creative learning opportunities because they're harder to document. Yet we all know that some of the best moments of learning in our lives, in our children's lives, they happen on the fly, unplanned, according to the curriculum. So I just am really sad to see when people get really, when they're in states where you have to report, and some states are worse than others, we know. There's just sometimes nothing to be done about that. You just have to work with it and do the best you can.
Right. Well, I remember one of my children coming up with a big, poster board, and so we just took a lot of pictures, and I had that in my portfolio, and we documented. In fact, I just blogged about one of the things that we did just studying about rockets, and we had just built our house, so we had our refrigerator box, and here's my husband wanting to clear out everything. He's my neat-nick, and I'm the collector going, no, we can use that.
Yeah.
And I was looking in my photo album, and I did find a picture. Of course, I tagged my daughter, who has been staying off of Facebook lately, which is probably good. But I found a picture of her sticking her head out of the box, and she's now mommy homeschooling. But, those are the lengths we went to really teach the children about different things. And, there are so many options. So let's talk about that. Today we're going to be talking about, what are the choices that are available. Of course, we've already covered that there are so many. And we don't have time to go into learning styles. And so for those of you who are listening, there is an option in the handout. Those of you that are in the chat room right now, you have the handout. There will be a link to an audio that Kathy did for me some time ago for our Ultimate Homeschool Expo, where she discussed learning styles, and even there was a handout that went with that, Kathy, if I recall, and you had people cut out grid. Yeah, and I'm trying to remember. That was in 2011 as we're talking today, a couple of years later. So I'm amazed that it was hands-on, so I remember. That will be available, and probably what I'm going to do is have it as a podcast on this network, and I'll get Kathy's permission, of course, before
you've got
going
it
forward
yeah.
with that. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Put you on the spot here live. Kathy. So we'll listen to that as far as learning styles go, but let's talk about learning modalities and the difference between that and learning styles.
Right. Learning modalities are, and sometimes people call learning modalities learning styles. Learning modalities are the visual, kinesthetic, and auditory learners, the idea that some of us learn best by seeing. We're visual learners. Auditory learners learn best by hearing, kinesthetic by doing, body motion, that sort of thing. And that is one way of looking at the whole idea of learning styles and choosing curriculum. Because we all do have different strengths and weaknesses. Some people are very fortunate in that they're very kind of level across the spectrum and they can learn in any different, one of the modalities. But especially with our children, we'll often see preferences for one or another. And the idea is that when you're teaching your child something new, you teach to their strengths, to their strongest modality, so that they can learn most easily. And then you'll go back and review in other ways. Now, learning styles takes a slightly different approach, and there are a number of different systems for learning styles out there. And, I have my own system that I use with Wiggly Willy, Perfect Paula, Competent Carl, and Sociable Sue. And, but the idea is to notice, again, your child's strengths and weaknesses. And learning styles address more issues than the learning modalities. So it gives you, a little bit more fine-tuned system when you approach these. But any of these systems are helpful because the idea is just to tune in to what's going on with your children, to notice how do they learn most easily, and then just capitalize on that. You see in a classroom where a teacher, you know, they have one way they're teaching to the whole classroom. And, you know, some of the kids pick it up. And then if there's time and it's a good teacher, they'll go back and they'll reteach to, you know, using another learning style to try to reach more of the children. Well, some of the other kids are bored because they've already got it. But, you know, trying to reach different learners. In the home school, you know, we can know what that is up front and try to do a more efficient job right up front.
Right. And that does help, you know. And, you know, one of the things that I learned from you as well, Kathy, is, and this seems so obvious, but I had not considered my own learning style because I found that I was pushing my style on my children. And I blogged about that recently, that I was, I would much rather read it in a book, you know, and like my idea of a great outing is to sit and watch, you know, look at the beautiful mountains and the water and not go climbing. That's a chore. You know, we went to Tennessee for a family vacation, and the one year I did have to go down to where the waterfall was, you know, the base of the waterfall, and it was like everybody said, you know, so great. And I'm thinking, wow, that view from up top was much better. And the next year we went back, I had a baby. So that was a really good excuse. I had my little one that I couldn't go on the hike, and I got to sit with my mother-in-law and look at the beautiful lake and you know, because she wasn't climbing. But my kids weren't like that. They wanted to get their boots out and go out in the, you know, the swampland that we live in and, you know, collect the turtles and, you know, come in and say, you know, can we keep this? And I just said, you know, do we really have to, you know? and so that was the big joke that, you know, you talk about science, and I would say, yes, I talk about it, because when we were starting, people were afraid of science, you know, that was not something, you know, our mutual friend before Dr. J. Wild came out with, you know, his curriculum, which he started before I did. But, you know, he talked about it in a much clearer fashion than what I had learned. I mean, I relearned biology with my kids and so forth. But, you know, it still was, to me, the hands-on was not my way of learning, but it was theirs. So considering a parent's, you know, modality as well is important.
Right, because I see, you know, one of the most common situations we have with homeschooling families is that the, you know, the mom usually, sometimes even the dad, but the mom, you know, generally they're more what I would call perfect Paula or sociable Sue, but they're generally more oriented towards let's do school. And the kids often, especially the younger boys, you know, wiggly willies, the girls too oftentimes, when they're young, they just want to run and play and experience things. And even if, as they grow older, their learning style becomes more of a perfect Paula or sociable Sue or competent Carl, that happens over time. So, you know, what are we doing to our, you know, our young, our first, second graders, you know, plop them down with the books and the workbooks, you know, and the computer drills, and they're just bored silly. And yet this is a time when we can be introducing them to learning in a way that they develop a love for learning. You know, I guess I feel that way all the way through. You know, we want them to love learning. And so if we pay attention to our own learning style, which becomes by default our teaching style, as you're describing for yourself, if we pay attention to that and even guard against it so that we are trying to teach our children in the ways they learn best instead of the ways that we learn best, we'll do a better job. It takes more work. And so, you know, again, sometimes, you know, people just don't want to do that. But, you know, if you want to do a good job, you want to do a more efficient job, it's worth taking the time.
No, it is. And, you know, there are some, you know, quite a few things you can do to have, you know, and not necessarily child-directed, but things that they're really interested in. And I think that's important because otherwise the kids that really haven't had, you know, some input in their education, I find, are the ones that when you ask them what their interests are, they really don't know what to say. And it, you know, you'll say to them, you know, well, is there one subject you like? And they'll just blanketly say, no, I don't like school. And this is, you know, across the board, whether they are homeschooled or they're in school. And so, you know, you want to avoid that and, you know, as much as you can. And, of course, with our time, you know, everyone has a different set of issues in their life. So this is not to say, you know, if you're not doing any studies or you're not, you know, really getting into what your children like, you're doing a bad job. That's not at all what we're saying. So, you know, everybody's situation is different.
And that probably, you know, that brings up some of the issues with, you know, Common Core and some of the other standards pressures that homeschoolers are rightly concerned about. In many states, we don't have to be concerned. But in the end, the whole standards movement affects standardized tests and will eventually affect the SAT college entry test, that level.
Right.
And the concern is that it pushes people into this standardized approach to education, where we don't have the opportunity to do the delight-directed, you know, child-centered learning. Not that we should always be doing things that are child-centered, but if your child gets interested in a subject, it's so much more worthwhile to just jump off and do some study on that subject when that interest is hot, rather than waiting, well, it's not on our schedule for 2 years, and they're no longer interested. But to be able to capitalize on that. And if you're stuck to, well, the standards are saying do this this week, you know, it just, you can't put that together.
No,
so I don't know. This is one of the challenges, one of the biggest challenges the homeschool world is facing right now. What are we going to do in the face of this push for the standards movement?
Right, and there is a question here that I'm going to ask you as soon as we come back from break, but we're just going to take a few minutes here, and we'll be right back.
I'm a publisher, and one day my daughter Christina asked me to write a novel with her. Well, that day was long ago, and that little girl is now an adult. But our novels live on. The Truth Seekers Mystery Series highlights a homeschool family, the Murphy Team, in an action-adventure novel that is sure to entertain as well as teach creation truths. To get your copy, visit our website at truthseekersmysteryseries.com.
Hi and welcome back. My name is Felice Gerwitz and this is an episode of the Vintage Homeschool Moms. And today with me on the line is Kathy Duffy. You can find Kathy at KathyDuffyReviews.com and that's Kathy with a C. Welcome back, Kathy. And we were talking a little bit about Common Core before the break and I have a question here in the Q&A section that I'm going to ask you. You ready?
Okay. I don't know. Hot button topic.
Oh, I know. It's so funny. Let me preface this question with when I was hosting the Ultimate Homeschool Expo in the fall or in the spring of last year and this whole thing came up, I tried to interview several people who didn't even want to touch this. So it is a touchy question, but you know, Kathy, you've been a little bit ahead of the pack here, and you have a book that I remember. And, in fact, I went to go get it on my shelf and must have loaned it out and never got it back, called Government Nannies. And I believe memory, let's see how good my memory is, but it was like in the 1990s that you wrote that book. Is that right?
1995, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you kind of talked about this a little bit. So, you know,
that was the theme in that book. Yeah, the standards movement is nothing new. This has been going on for a long time, and they've been very upfront about where they intended to go with it. This is simply what they've told us they were going to do all along, moving from local standards to state standards to national standards to international standards. We haven't hit the international yet. Just wait. But the idea, you know, has always been there, and you know, the data collection is a big piece of it, and I think people are sometimes sidetracked into the Common Core and the issues with curriculum and forgetting that even an even bigger issue is the data collection, that they are collecting this detailed data on children and families through your children. And at the same time, we've got the healthcare system that is intended to do extensive data collection. And all of this is supposed to get, you know, put together at some point. So, you know, the data collection is something people need to really tune in, pay attention to. But meanwhile, education is our concern. And the Common Core standards are, in my mind, they're just the latest of the permutations in the standards. You know, we've had this, you know, Goals 2000 and No Child Left Behind and the, you know, national standards coming from these different groups. And, you know, we go through different sets of standards. Common Core is the latest set of standards. And you can get upset about the content of any of these groups of standards. To me, the content, yeah, may be problematical in places, but it's the idea behind it that we are requiring every child to learn the same thing at the same time. I think that's a horrendous idea.
I know.
When we
What's
think about children.
With that picture?
Children aren't little machines that we pour information into on schedule. Just does not work that way.
Right.
And so the more we do this, it's a dehumanizing way of approaching education. So, you know, very wrong, but they are trying to force it by the tests. The tests then are being redesigned, and this is a big issue. The tests are designed now more and more to test specific information instead of general knowledge and general skills. They are getting more specific on the information. People aren't paying much attention. We've got the math and language arts standards already adopted in the Common Core. The next generation science standards are the latest part of this, and they are just in the process of being adopted. They've been adopted by, I think, 6 states so far, but that's happening very rapidly. They were only recently released. Mm-hmm. And those standards are full of evolutionary content, and I'm not hearing an uproar about them. It's like they're being ignored. We should be talking about these because they are even more problematical than what's in the math and language arts.
Right, and
but
I think because
again,
homeschoolers
we're going that
think
direction.
They're going to be right. Homeschoolers think they're going to be exempt, and so I'm afraid at some point that it's going to filter down. Like you said, the way that they're going to catch it, like the catch-all, is going to be the testing. Because my kids are right now in the midst of SAT prep, so right now for my last two that I'm homeschooling, this isn't an issue yet. But for the next crop. That are thinking about going to college, you know, what is that going to mean? So
the tests aren't in place yet. They haven't even created the tests.
Right.
They've got some preliminary tests that are, you know, they have some of this type of questions from the Common Core, but we really don't have the tests yet. So you know, it hasn't really hit us. When those tests hit, that's going to light some fires.
Right.
Okay.
Well. When I was, and I'm going to answer that too. Just recently, I received a book. I won't say whose book it is yet because it's maybe one of our upcoming show hosts who is going to host a show on, you know, SAT prep and college, you know, requirements and things like that. But in her book, it was excellent. It talked about there's experimental questions already in the SAT that you're not graded for. And I'm thinking,
always.
Oh, my gosh. Because that, first of all, that angers me as a parent because I'm thinking, well, you're wasting my kids' time answering these questions so that you can do exactly what you're talking about, you know, collect data. So,
those experimental questions have been in there in the past. They've been in there for forever. And
okay.
Part of that is to test questions, the validity of questions for future use. And so the questions can often be innocuous. They're just like any other questions. So that's not necessarily the issue. Of more concern is the fact that the man who heads up the college board that creates the SAT came straight out of the Common Core and will definitely, has already said, will definitely align the SAT with Common Core.
And that's the question here. It says, I'm concerned about Common Core and publishers who are aligned. Should I be?
Oh, the question about publishers, this is a very hot-button question in the,
right.
in the homeschool world. Alignment is a tricky word because a publisher will sometimes show alignment. They'll say, we're aligned with the Common Core. Well, that can mean all kinds of things. The Common Core has lists of standards. And so a publisher might go through, they've already got their curriculum done, and then they'll look at the Common Core, and then they'll make a chart showing which lessons or parts of lessons address items that are in the Common Core. Now, they might align, might have a lot of matches. They might be covering a great deal of what's in the Common Core. They might not be covering very much of what's in there. Alignment is just showing how they line up. So you have to be careful, you know, just because something is aligned, it may or may not well reflect the Common Core. And then some products accidentally line up quite well. They didn't intend to do that, but, you know, because, you know, the Common Core is asking, you know, the students learn basic math and word problems and mathematical thinking, you know, things that we are teaching. You're going to have alignment in any product. It's to what degree and what, you know, what the intent is that's at stake here.
Right.
So if you've got products that were created primarily for the public school system, and especially those coming from the larger publishers that are new products, they might very well be highly aligned with the Common Core. While most of the products that were created first for the homeschool market are usually less well aligned with the Common Core. And even some products that align well with the Common Core might be great products. They just happen to align. So, you know, I think it's kind of a false way of trying to judge publishers. I think it's more worthwhile, you know, looking at publishers in terms of, you know, who's their primary market, who are they trying to please. If the publisher's goals are more in line with your goals, then you're more likely to find their curriculum helpful to you. If
right.
the publisher's goals aren't your goals, then not. And that, to me, is a better basis for deciding, you know, whether a publisher is good or not, you know, in terms of the Common Core. I'm going to bring up one publisher here who has been unfairly maligned about the whole thing. MathUC has a terrific math program, very hands-on, visual, spatial, great for kinesthetic learners. And they have added some worksheets to include, and they're optional, to include some of the problems that address things that are in the Common Core. You can do those or not. Because some families are in states, as this other mom mentioned, you know, where they're having to report in, they're having to do things that the schools are asking them to do. And, you know, they're concerned about this. So they've got a few things in there that people can skip if they want to, but the program is still the great program it's been for years. And, it, mm-hmm. and the heart of the people at MathUC is not at all the heart of the people of Common Core, what they're after. So, you know, criticizing publishers like that is really like shooting yourself in the foot. They have a great program.
So look at that, you know, as Kathy said, not just a blanket maybe, you know, are they aligned or not? But look at it on an individual basis and see if this is something that will work for you or your family. And that's good advice. It's so funny. I knew you were going to say that. I just knew it. So, but that is a good example. It is a really good example. But, you know, I received the document as well from people wanting to know. And the fact that I'm unit studies plus creation-based, it was really easy to say no, that I wasn't aligned, and there was no way that I would ever be aligned because I think Common Core would throw me out first.
But Felice, no. even if you're saying you're not aligned at all, if you've set
there
up, you know, okay,
right.
we're not. Then there are some people that are going to say, oh, well, we can't use you because you're not at all doing what, you know, the schools
right.
are asking us to do.
Right.
And so
it's
thinking
a
false
right.
distinction, yeah,
right.
because some people are concerned.
Right.
And that's not really the issue.
And I think, you know, my biggest thing here and the theme always is going to go back to conviction and also, you know, exactly what the enemy wants, and that is to cause division. So what better way than to have brother fight against brother and sister against sister?
Right.
And within the homeschool, you know, Christian community as well as not, you know, so there is a lot of that going on. And I think our biggest concern needs to be to pray for continued unity and to, you know, keep our eyes open, be vigilant. But like you said, Kathy, you know, not throw out the baby with the bathwater and just keep our eyes open. And I had never heard that the data collection was something we need to keep our eyes open for. And, you know, that is really important. So we'll definitely keep an eye on that. But we have quite a few questions stacking up here, so let me get to those.
Okay,
So Nancy from Texas asks, my daughter struggles with math facts, you know, addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. Do you have any ideas?
It depends. I mean, that's a real broad problem.
Right.
I always like to use hands-on manipulatives to see if that helps. If they're, you know, moving blocks around and they can see what's actually happening, oftentimes the visual memory helps them to master the facts more. But sometimes it's just simply a matter of practice. And here's one of the reasons why the computer can be helpful, or, you know, apps on the iPad or whatever. Some of these math practice games, some of them are really good. Some of them are time wasters. Some of them, you know, they have so many cute little guys jumping around and cartoons and things and stuff, and it's just so slow on the actual math practice that's a waste of time. But some are good. There was one reflex math I really thought was excellent in that regard. So, you know, it depends what the issue is. If it's, you know, really grasping the facts well using concrete practice, you know, hands-on type
right.
things to really cement the facts can be helpful. But otherwise, finding ways to drill that are most effective for each child, you know, computer, flashcards tend to be old school and rather boring compared to some of the newer ways of doing things. So just check out your options.
Well, here's a question. I think it's more in the realm of encouragement from a mom from Missouri. And she says she has a special needs son who at 10 just completed kindergarten. And she's a little frustrated that her daughter, who is a teenager is and smart go-getter, is she feels like this child is getting lost in the shuffle because, you know, she doesn't have as much time to spend with her. So, you know, she said her youngest learns more by visual, and so she's got some things, you know, on an Android tablet. But she's having problems finding what she should be using with him. And I know when we discussed this show, you did ask me to put out a disclaimer saying you haven't gone through the educational apps and things like that. But I know that there are some groups out there that have set up, I think one of them is called App School, that has something out there that really takes some time and reviews some of those apps that you might want to look at. But
so many of the different curricula out there are creating their own apps and essentially, you know, just putting it onto the computer. I mean, Explode the Code would be an example of something that's been around a long time, you know, phonics program.
Right.
And then they've, you know, now created, you know, their online versions. And there's so much out there now. And usually they're pretty much the same as, you know, what you had before. But it does make it easier for parents. So, you know, great thing to use in those kinds of situations where you need a child working independently.
Very good. And then in addition to that question was, you know, how do you test a special needs child? Apparently that their state is getting really strict with that, and they expect testing no matter what the capabilities are.
Well, that's ridiculous, isn't it?
I have no
answer for that, because, you know, if a child is having trouble with the reading and writing, to put him on a test that requires him to do things he's not able to do, you're not going to be testing anything except his inability to read and write or his struggles with that.
Right. And, you know, I know that here in Florida you have to show that there is some progress being made from year to year. And, you know, and I know teaching special ed, we had extensive IEPs, individual evaluation plans, that, you know, had the reason we had to keep such detail was to show progression.
Right.
And so, you know, I would say, that that is something that you can do to show progression so that when a child is being evaluated, that you would be able to take that in. And I would also make sure that you are a part of one of, there are two now, legal entities that deal with homeschoolers. I know there's one based in Florida and, you know, the other one is in Virginia. So look at those entities and see what, you know, what regard they have for that kind of thing, and just, you know, be sure that you're under that, the auspices of that umbrella. So, Judy from Pennsylvania asks, what advice can Kathy give to moms who shy away from curriculum because they fear any sort of bringing school home mentality? I sometimes try to convince moms that there is no harm in using textbook workbook styles if it works for your child. So what are your thoughts on that?
If you're hanging around with a lot of unschoolers, you might issue. Most people aren't running into that. What I have seen happen, and probably, Felicia, you have too, most homeschoolers, I think you mentioned this, most homeschoolers over time become eclectic. They use this, they use that, a little workbook, some, you know, hands-on stuff, whatever works, you know. And it doesn't matter what anybody else is doing, you know. You just use whatever works with your children. And oftentimes that's a combination of some workbooks or, you know, some textbooks, some real books, whatever. So, it just depends on your children. And I think we have to be really cautious about what other people are saying or, you know, telling us, you know, don't let somebody else tell you what you should or shouldn't be doing.
Unfortunately,
you know your
you
children
have two,
best.
Yeah, you have two renegades on the line here that don't go with the flow. We're both like to swim upstream. So,
well, we've been through this and we see what happens, you know, with our children and, you know, we've had, you know, gone through this. And you know, you learn what works best with your own children. And I mean, I'll give one example that we've figured out over time with my oldest son with math, that we found over the years the best time for him to do his math was late at night up on his top bunk bed with a radio going, you know, sprawled out flat on his bunk bed. And that defies everything everybody would ever say to you. You know, he just, you know, he doesn't have a desk. He's not sitting properly. It's not quiet, you know. But by the end of the day, he was very active. By the end of the day, he'd burned off enough energy. He was comfortable up on that bed. It was isolated for him. Having the radio on just kind of blocked out other noises. It was like white noise for him so that he could concentrate. And that was his best time for getting that math done. So, you know, it worked. So I don't, you know, it doesn't matter in the end what other people say. You do what works for you.
Yeah, I always said I was curriculum impaired because I could never use a curriculum the way it was designed. So if I did use a textbook, I would use it as a resource. And so we would pick and choose, you know, different things that we did in the book. And so, you know, it really can work for you. And the other thing, I think that people discount the value of vocabulary because really what does it boil down to, Kathy? Do you understand the definition of what the word means, you know, and it doesn't matter what the curriculum is, whether it's math or, I can't remember what my son asked me this morning, but it was a math term. And, or actually it was my daughter because she went to get her phone and usually there are no phones, no minis, no nothing in the schoolroom. And I said, what are you doing? And you know, this is the new way they look things up. They don't go get the dictionary. They look them up online quickly. And so she was, there was a term she didn't want to bother to look in the index of the book, I guess. But, you know, a lot of times they find, you know, that's why protection software is very important on your devices because they'll find a little video or something that explains it really well. And so vocabulary for us is a very big part of our school because that way, if you have to show outcome, you can do that with some sort of a test if you need to that has that portion very heavily highlighted so that, you know, the children have an understanding. So, you know, I just want to throw that out there because we do a lot with the root words and things like that because, it really helps them with their learning. And then you're not spending a ton of time, you know, doing those workbook pages. So, you know, and it is something that is important. So there's a couple more questions here that I want to take before our hour is up, which we only have about 5 more minutes, so there's 2 questions here. And the first is from Jenny, who wants to know, will you be reviewing apps in the future?
I don't know. Probably. I'm doing a little bit, but, you know, most of what I'm reviewing a lot of online resources, you know, more and more online resources, and I'm finding the apps are essentially the same thing, and you're just using them on there.
Right.
So, I'm just, sticking with the online one that's got the broadest application, and, you know, the apps generally just follow from that. But who knows with technology, I'm not sure. I may have to branch out and just start doing apps on the side. But
right
now I'm just overwhelmed with, requests for reviews. I have to turn down. Yeah. Just, trying to stay up on it is overwhelming.
Well, you know,
so,
we'll
see.
Even the schools are using innovative approaches. My brother-in-law was really enamored with the whole homeschool movement, and he did a lot of study into how children learn. And he was a high school history professor, and so he designed a method that he used in his school. And I was teasing him at one point, and he gave the kids a pass-fail. So the high-end kids were very upset with him because it was going to break their curve, you know, if they took his class. And how he managed to even get the school system to go along with him. You know, he was very tenured, and he was a college professor and AP level and all of that. But he even used this method, which was very visual, giving the kids a run sheet where they could, you know, take their own progress, giving them a lot of open-ended. He showed a lot of pictures, so it was PowerPoint-driven, presentation. And he ended up doing this for our homeschool, our personal homeschool, and we did a video series both for government and elections and also for history. And I found that, and very constitutionally based. So I found that even that type of thing, because it drew the kids in, it didn't give them the answer. And at first, he had a group of frustrated homeschool kids. I will tell you, when you present something that doesn't have, that is probably one of the things I will say about homeschooling is that they want to know the answers. They either want me to sit and look, because the keys are in my office here, but they want to know pretty quickly, don't they, Kathy? I don't want to, I'll get to it, in a week.
Well, they do, but it depends on how you teach them. If you teach them in a more Socratic, fashion, then they, they learn they have to kind of think this through on their own. But, along the same line, I am more interested, I guess, in some of these programs that, like Easy Peasy is a free curriculum online. And she's gone through, and she has different grade levels, and, you go through, the lesson plans are laid out, and you just click on links to videos, books, resources, and things, and it's all connected online, and it's free, because there are so many resources already out there. And the kids will stop, and they'll be doing some paper pencil work and stuff, but a lot of it they'll do online. And the American Chemical Society has put up at least 2 science courses that is totally online there with links to videos, demos, all kinds of research, a very, very rich course for free online with all of the links just built in. So that's the kind of thing I see happening that I get really excited about. I look at those and go, wow, and I can't believe this is free. There's going to be more and more of that sort of thing, not just, simple things, but these complex, rich courses that really use the internet.
Very good. And I think that, the schools are also including that the kids must take an online course. And it was funny, I was listening to 2 moms this weekend at the ball field, and both of these mothers really are hands-on. They both care about their kids' education, and one of them in particular, her husband's a physician, and she keeps telling me that she's pulling her kids out and I'm homeschooling them. I'm saying, no, I'm not. We can't do that here in Florida. But one of the things that they were both appalled at was how the virtual school was very invasive and how much time it took. And they just said to me, how could you homeschool? Just this one class was so difficult.
Yes.
But it's a different thing, you know.
But that's a typical experience. Yeah.
With virtual, yeah. Okay, last question here. What do you look for in a good curriculum? And that's a pretty general question.
Unfortunately, that's not a simple answer because it depends on, again, my goals, what I'm trying to accomplish, who I'm going to use it for, what am I trying to do. So, something's good if it's got good content, usability, you can figure out what to do with it, how to use it. It's practical. But then again, some people like more hand-holding, some like less, some just give me an outline and I want to run with it. So what's good for you might not be good for me, to try and just say this makes a good curriculum, that's a much more complex question.
Right. Well, and, it really is something that you've addressed in your book as well, so that people can go through, again, and go through and look at what your goals are and what your goals are for you and your children. Well, Kathy, we are at the end of an hour, which went really fast, and I want to thank you
really
so
fast.
Much. Yeah, for
it's
coming on.
It's been a pleasure,
Well, thank you. And listen, we look forward to hearing back from you again, as I'm sure more of this Common Core is going to come out, and you can help us to fine-tune that also, and come back on another time and answer some more curriculum questions. Appreciate it. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Visit Felice at MediaAngels.com and TheVintageHomeschoolMoms.com. Vintage Homeschool Moms is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.